Hi, friends. It's Aislinn.
And Joe. Welcome to season 3 at our dinner table.
And nothing is off limits at our dinner table. So settle in, grab your favorite beverage,
and pull up a chair.
Because we have a lot to talk about. I came home after going to town today, and Houdini hadn't gotten out of his cage again. Or his bed, whatever we're calling it.
I like that bed a lot.
Yeah.
But it has a lot of zippers.
It does. It's like a foldable. So it's not like one of those metal ones.
Right. I like that. It just this feels one has more coziness.
Soft. Yeah. It feels more comfortable. But he can unzip it. Yeah. He can like figure it out completely. And for a while, we didn't understand what was going on. We're like, why do you keep leaving the dog out? And you're like, I didn't leave the dog out.
I did not leave the dog out. Oh, what are you suggesting? He opened that zipper all by himself? Yes. That's exactly what I'm suggesting.
And then finally he did it to me a couple times. And so
I was vindicated.
And then we tried some other little like ways of fastening it.
So I have to zip tie them closed.
And except then the front the main one.
Yeah, he does have a fire escape.
Well, for a little while it had a paper clip, but he could undo the paper clip.
It's like a piece of luggage with a nice luggage where there's two zippers. And then when you put the zippers together, you create a perfect hole for a tiny little poodle paw to get through to work it open, I guess. I have not videotaped this.
Oh, he does it exactly like that.
Right.
He's very smart.
So, yeah, there's a little clip on the thing that it's worked out real good.
Yeah. Houdini did not get out today, in case you were wondering. And by the way, welcome to the dinner table.
Hello.
We're glad you're here.
Hello.
We always love being able to host you at our dinner table.
You can bet we're going to talk about food that we eat.
The dog. The chickens, and something as controversial as we can come up with.
That's not how it works.
No? How's it work?
No, we never had a thing like, let's be as controversial.
No, of course not. But we're good at finding things that actually make a good story and things people want to talk about or hear about.
I just thought it was the stuff we talked about at the dinner table.
Well, it is. But it's the best stuff at the dinner table.
So pull up a chair. We've got a lot to talk about.
Welcome to the dinner table.
So one of the best things that has happened in my life in a while occurred this week.
I was convinced
that the best thing that we could do for ourselves when it came to keeping the house clean was to buy the, I'm going to give a free like plug thing. It's a Bissell wet dry floor robot. It's a Roomba, but it's the Bissell one. You push the button and it sweeps your floor.
It's amazing.
And the problem here, and it's not a problem, it's a wonderful problem to have, is that the hardwoods, the shade of brown that they are, show you every speck of dust and dirt and sand, and we live on a farm.
Yep.
So that stuff's in our house.
Yep.
And then there's an attachment that mops your floor.
It's that thing, you know,
you push
whenever
the button and you're done.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's that thing, you know, that like encourages you to clean up your space because things just feel cleaner. Well, if you get yourself one of these things, and my mom's been trying to convince me of this thing forever, like you need one of these. And at the other house, we had stairs and stairs and stairs. Like it just, it would have been much, much hassle.
This is all single level.
Yeah. For the most part, it can go. We shut doors to keep it in and out of places and whatever. But this thing.
You set up a schedule on your app.
Cleans the house just enough to make you want to clean it a little more.
You're right.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. That with that dirty it floor attracts you. You're right.
Because when the floor gets dirty, you start to give up. And then you're like sweeping. I can tell you because this is where I was going in life a week before this occurred. The floor is just dirty. And now we've begun moving the things in from the old house. The last of the things are getting stacked. We have boxes and dirty floors and dirty toilets. I give up. But then Clinificent came into our life.
Yes.
And you're right. Everything has changed.
For the cost of a couple of housekeeper visits.
Oh my God, what was I hiring a housekeeper for? Literally, it was to clean the floors. That's what I was hiring a housekeeper in, and the kitchen, and the bathrooms,
and the toilets. Yeah.
How do we get a Clinificent type of situation that just like magically swoops, sparkly clean bathroom? That's the one I want. I think we might be inviting AI into our house when that begins to occur.
Oh, yeah. Alexa, clean the toilets. And they're done?
Mm-hmm.
How much does that cost?
Right. I have this idea. I love doing public help me name things on the farm. I really do. When I first was on the farm a decade ago, we had Lolly and Pop, the donkeys. had to have some kind of protection out here. It was before there was really anything else on the land. And Lolly and Pop got named on the internet. And that was a good name. And I really was impressed by it. So yesterday I was out there with the baby chicks. I was playing with them. And we have this one that is the friendliest chicken we've ever had in all the chickens that we've had. As a chick, she comes up to my hand to be pet. Like, she wants my attention. She wants me to touch her. She's interested. And I came up with the name Gigi for her because she's a gray. She's actually a blue astralorp, but she's gray. She's really pretty colored. And she's just, I mean, these chicks are beautiful.
Yeah.
Have you noticed that?
You like, did a good job.
They're not just ugly chicks.
No.
They're beautiful.
They seem to have skipped that adolescent period that's really not the most attractive.
So here's Gigi. She's gorgeous and I love her. And what's her name? And I'm like, she's gray. And I try to pull things out of my head that are like things that are interesting to me or things that like pull from our creative side, our personality. And I'm enthralled by the whole Grey Gardens concept, those two sisters.
That documentary.
Right?
Yeah.
Sisters or mother-daughter?
Right.
Yeah. And Drew Barrymore played the younger one of the two.
And it was based on a world-famous documentary about those two real-life people.
They're just in their own world. They're on their own plane
right
over there. That's where she got her name, Gigi.
Gigi.
Well, that got me thinking. I was like, okay, well, how am I that creative? I just got excited about the idea that we could ask our podcast listeners to help us name the chickens. Get creative with us.
I was out there earlier this morning with a tape measure to determine mathematically how many chickens we could maximum have in our coop.
Yep. And
the answer is 32.
32.
We currently have 20 and we had capped it at 20.
But 20 means 8 of them are the baby chicks. It's still as if we have a flock of 12 right now.
Right. And then 8 chicks in a box.
But if I give them kind of, if we give them kind of a run through of the names that we have chosen as a family over the years.
Okay.
I can't name a chicken until it gets to about this stage. This is about the stage
when
we
start showing its true personality.
Exactly. I got to see a little bit. I got to look at it.
Begin forming pecking order.
And the reason why that even matters too is because it helps you to get to know that chicken so that when you're watching your flock, you understand the health of chickens. You understand the older chickens, the younger chickens.
You need to see if any of them are walking funny.
Exactly. Just all the things. All right, so let's go through the names of the chickens that we've had so far.
You had had 100 chicks once upon a time when I first kind of met you.
Have we told that story already?
Yes, and then we moved in together and built a coop and got our first 8 chickens.
Right.
The law in Corpus Christi was 7, but we ordered 8 in case one of them perished.
In my past experience.
Then we kept all 8 of them because they were all good.
You were going to lose a chick. That was my past experience. And this first go-round, our kids are still pretty young.
Sure.
Everybody names a chick.
Everyone gets one.
Exactly.
Poppy.
Uh-huh.
You named one Leslie Note.
Yep.
Harvey was the one that almost died, but then came back to life during and after Hurricane Harvey.
Yes.
We had the chicks for 2 days.
2-day-old chicks during the middle of a hurricane.
Your son named Mother Clucker.
Yeah.
My daughter named Dodie.
Yep.
My daughter has a tendency to name the chicken after one of the musical groups she's really, really into and then falls out of.
So that's why we have Dodie and Poppy in that flock, because Poppy was like, oh,
another YouTube thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. Your daughter named Curry.
Yes.
And my son named Gizmo.
Exactly.
They're all rest in peace now.
They are. That was with that whole pit bull incident.
Yeah.
That was when the last two went. Mother Clucker and Leslie Nope. It's kind of a bummer.
And after we'd lost a couple, we thought we'd get a few more.
Exactly.
So we got the second round.
We ordered 8.
Again.
Because you kind of, that's the thing. You have to order 8.
There's an 8 minimum.
But with that round, we actually did lose one. She had a scissor beak.
Oh, that's right.
And she couldn't eat real well.
Her name
so
was...
she passed very young. Her name was Fiskers. So she got a name even before she passed. Barb's had some big, beautiful earrings on. And
we
then
still
there
have
was
her.
We do have her. And then there was Kung Pao and Teriyaki. They look like twins.
They were
so
twins.
We picked names where we didn't really have to know them apart necessarily. But one of them passed. And so we don't know whether that was Kung Pao or Teriyaki, but the name that stuck was...
Kung Pao.
Exactly. Then we had Sam E, because when she was a baby, everybody kept saying she looked like an eagle.
Right.
And so I got the Muppet eagle in my head.
Right.
So she got to be Sam E. And then Cartier, you put Cartier on here, but I think it's Cartier, right?
Like, I thought it was Cartier.
That's Cardi. I don't know. See, this is the confusion because when I say it to people, they think we're talking about Cardi B, but no, no, no.
We're talking about Playboi Carti.
Playboi Carti. That's the Hunter one that he came up with. And then Lady Bird.
Who named her?
Savannah.
Maleficent.
That was me.
Yeah.
Always.
And that chicken we still have, and she is black and sleek with purple and green tones, and she's gorgeous.
She's Maleficent.
Yep. So then when we moved here.
And that's when we got Nimrod.
Right.
Which you guys already know about Nimrod.
That's our rooster.
Uh-huh.
He is incredible. Tonight we just sat and watched the chickens for 5-10 minutes, and he put on a dance, a seductive dance.
And Savannah, knowing that we're moving to the farm and getting new chickens, says, we need a chicken named Onyx before we even get a chicken.
The she black
says,
one.
We need a chicken named Onyx. Okay, I think there's a black chicken coming. So the next round that we pick up from a friend, this is us getting 5 new hens. One of them is a black, but with silky legs. So like a silky astralorp.
Yeah.
Something like that. And so she ends up getting the Onyx name. And then we have 2 of those kind of a generic breed of, it's like a cross, something or another.
Light brown,
speckled, whatever. Those look exactly alike. So we called them the Tweedles, Tweedledee and Tweedledum. That helps because if one of them happens to pass, we just have a Tweedle left.
Right.
So then we have this one poor black astralarp that for some reason we haven't been able to come up with a name for her. So that's one you guys are going to have to help us out with. But we'll tell you how we've started with our new baby chicks. First of all, we have this crazy black and white mohawk crested chicken. He's awesome. I keep saying he because I ordered straight run and hope that he's a rooster. So I keep calling him a he because that's how it worked with my pregnancy. If I just called it a he, then it was a he. And if I called it a she, it was a she.
Because we got these 8 new chicks straight run, there's a chance that a couple of them could be roosters.
Well, we didn't get all 8 straight run. We got 2 straight run. This one. And his name or her name is Polly Walnuts.
Oh, it's so good.
So good. When you see this chicken, you're going to completely understand why we named the chicken Polly Walnuts. Then, of course, Gigi, I already talked about. My mom named this tiny little which could also be a rooster as well. Uh-huh. It's a possibility. Panda, because it's this really cute black and white little furry little silky thing. And then we have this gorgeous lady. She's got a white head, and then she's got a beautiful feathers coming down her back, and I can't wait to see what she looks like whenever she actually is grown up. She's an olive egger, which means she's going to lay green eggs, like dark green eggs. I have named her May, as in May Musk, because I was like, oh, yes, this is a May Musk, if you will. So then that leaves us with 4 more chicks that need to be named. So that's 5 chickens we have right now we need y'all's help naming.
Right.
And then on the way over is a new flock that I'm picking up. Because someone had to move off the property that they were on, and where they're moving, they can't take their chickens with them. So they're looking for a good home, and we're a very good home. And so I'm very happy to receive
your... She says they're varied and beautiful.
She says they're beautiful, they're healthy. Mm. So I'm very excited to pull in 10 more.
Okay, listen.
10 more.
Listen. It said 20 was the most.
Chicken
math. And now we're at 30. And I've measured the coop to determine and tell you that there's only 32. That's it. Are we done with 30, right? We're done with 30.
Well, we might have to gauge our roosters again after we find out for sure whether the little chicks are roosters. Well,
about 12, 13 weeks usually. That's when they'll try to cock-a-doodle-doo and they'll let you know.
Because we need some roosters. Because Nimrod's going to need some help. He's not going to be able to hang by himself with that many hens.
He is surrounded.
So that leaves us with 15 chickens to name.
Okay.
We're going to post some pictures. We're going to start one of those little polls where you can just like give us some suggestions, you know, that kind of thing. We'll play it out. It'll be fun. And you guys can help us name the chickens.
Fun.
Yeah.
Unanswered questions.
We were talking about our garage sale. And then a question came up while I was editing that I just have.
What's that?
You said you were doing a garage sale a year, sometimes 2.
Mm-hmm.
No, where were you getting stuff to have so many garage sales? Once your garage sale's done, where's the next batch of stuff coming from?
Have you not paid attention to how easy it is to stack stuff?
Accumulate?
We could go through the house minimally once a year. And if you think about it, it wasn't just me. It was me and my mom. My mom collects things.
I see.
And think about kids and clothes and toys.
It's turning over quick.
Yeah. We had a lot of stuff and we needed some cash flow back in those days, man.
That totally makes sense.
Of course it does.
At the garage sale, a guy came up to me and asked if I had any guns. And I offhandedly asked you, could I have sold a gun at a garage sale?
I don't know.
And I was thinking to myself, well, I live in this state. I should know the answer to that.
Mm-hmm.
You need a license if you repetitively buy and sell firearms with the principal motive of making a profit. In contrast, if you only make occasional sales of firearms from your personal collection, you do not need to be licensed. And if it's a private sale like that,
mm-hmm.
you can totally do that.
Cool.
And then it goes down to the city level of code of whatever that city allows. The answer is yes.
That city code thing, I can't leave that one there because we've just been having interesting conversations about city codes and how at the end of the day, city codes don't really mean anything. And it feels like it does because we live in a state where local government has the ability to, like, you know, make its own decisions. But the real deal that really matters at the end of the day is the Texas state constitution, which means that if you as a citizen of a city say that's not constitutional and take it to court, then you can null and void any law that a city makes, by the way. I just think that people don't know that they can change things if they choose to.
1 year ago today.
A time warp. Time warp. What are we doing here? What are we doing here? What are we doing here?
Do you listen to podcasts or YouTube videos or whatever on specific, like, give a schedule? Like, oh, it's Monday. The next episode of this or that came out.
Yes, I do that.
My Wednesday morning programming
mm-hmm.
is to listen to the new Beer in a Movie because mm-hmm. it came out that day.
Mm-hmm.
I listen to that.
Yep.
And then the next thing I listen to is 1 year ago today. 1 year ago today.
That's funny.
I didn't listen today.
Oh.
I'm going to tell you the title of it.
Uh-huh.
I want you to dig me a hole and set me on fire.
It's funny because we were literally just talking about this at the dinner table.
I didn't need to listen. I know exactly what we talked about.
We're weird. We're like weirdly, not just seasonal, but we're like on a repeat.
It seems that way. I went to a funeral yesterday.
Yeah. That's why we were talking about it.
A year ago from my father's memorial service.
Right.
That's crazy.
Right.
But it's not. That's how we
know.
It seems like
the synchronistic
this
everything.
1 year ago today thing has showed us over and over and over again. We are on a solar cycle of repeating behaviors.
we're on some kind of cycle.
Feels that way. And because I went to a funeral yesterday, we had a conversation.
Right.
An update.
About what do we want?
What do we want?
I think the way I said it today, actually.
This is what I want, the 1 year later update.
I am a carbon-based life form that wants to be put back in the carbon-based planet that we live on.
Right. You want your physical energy to go back into the cycle of life.
Yeah, that's literally all my body is. So right. Can we just put it back?
But last year, you had very specific thought
Well,
plan.
Yeah. Burn out, dig a hole and burn it, because I think technically that's the most legal way to do it. And
so,
it seems kind of like really cool to be like set on fire.
You want a funeral pyre made on our property where your body is in some ceremony burned, and then those ashes are put around and near the land, of course, and a tree specifically.
And I have images of like being toted down a ceremony, like maybe walking down the field.
You have pallbearers?
I'm on a bed with flowers all around me, and I'm like gorgeously decorated with the most fine dresses and everything, and then you set me on fire.
Okay. I would want to hire a funeral man to come and handle handling of your body and the herbs and spices, whatever that you're intending on involving.
A funeral man.
I don't want to touch. I will carry your body to the flame.
You know what
I
love best about this conversation?
Go ahead.
I just don't think you're going to be there.
Oh, well, that's a good point. But if I were...
If you were... You see, this is the conversation I need to be having with, like, Lillian.
You need to put this on paper and be very specific. But as far as burning you here on our property, we talked last year about how it can be possible.
Yeah.
But I would... If this is a thing we want to do, it's time to set these plans and write them on paper.
Yeah.
And go ask the questions and get a signature so that when this time happens.
The interesting thing
20,
that I
30,
find
40,
about
50.
Being like in this meat suit and not like depending on this meat suit for the rest of my existence
yes.
is that I'm caring less and less about what happens to my body when I die. I mean, I do care about it being turned back into the carbon earth because that's the thing that makes the most sense, and anything else is stupid human stuff that we think we're better because we have a consciousness that
right.
we create illusions based around what we believe happens after death. So, and I'm not, don't mishear me. I'm not saying I don't believe in life after death. I'm just saying my body is just a carbon life form
sure.
that needs to be put back in the carbon.
In the religion I was based on and the funeral service that I attended, it's just very much surrounded in an acceptable way to do it. I told you last night my thoughts about that funeral I attended.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious if you think that there's anything worth talking about there.
Well, last week I teased you about the color me unaware. I kind of laughed whenever you said that. And yes, that's exactly what I would call you currently, you know, whatever. And I think that the information, the download, the letting off of steam that you let occur last night tells me that you are interested in the conversation of awareness and personal awareness. And you know what? The timing of everything, if you think about the seasonality, not the seasonality, but the timing a year ago today was when we put your father to rest.
Yeah, I saw some of those relatives for the first time in that year.
Right. Exactly. So I think that it was a download. You had to let some things down.
Yeah, there was a lot on my mind.
Yeah.
And I had a very emotional reaction to it
mm-hmm.
about me, you know, about like my reaction sure. to this specific funeral and setting. And
that would be why I would call back the concept of awareness, because that's what I'm talking about when I'm mentioning, like, for us letting go of things and becoming aware of things. We can't know that we have specific types of trauma that we need to let go of unless we, you know, become aware of how we feel when we experience different things. And going to this funeral and the whole story was you're downloading some things.
Yeah, I definitely feel that way.
Good. I'm glad. I'm happy for you. You're going to feel a lot lighter.
Some things feel like they go deep. Deep inside, you know, like, how do I even begin to pull this thing out?
Yeah.
Does that
especially
make sense?
Yes, of course, because you've got a lifetime, maybe multiple lifetimes of shutting them in.
Yeah.
So now you're saying they're allowed to come out, and that is vulnerability, and vulnerability is scary. Mm-hmm. And men are taught no vulnerability.
When I consider editing every podcast that we've done up until now, like I remember talking about little pieces of all of this stuff over the last
mm-hmm.
3 years, whatever we've done.
Yeah.
It was just weird. A year later
mm-hmm.
to the week.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Episode 2.11.
Episode 2.11 that we're recording this on 1111. There's some trippy shit going on, man.
This is when hundreds and hundreds of people are disappointed because it's time for me to say that I did not make the goat curry.
See, that's why last week when you asked me if we were on a curry challenge and I was like, we are?
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, of course we are. And I'm like, how would I know that?
Yeah, of course we are. Sounded just like that. You should go back and listen.
So when are you going to make goat curry?
Okay, I'm not going to make
any
promises.
Are you ever going to cook
yes,
again?
Yes, I am going to cook.
He made a salad tonight.
I made a big salad tonight, but I did a fry night. Hello?
You did do a fry night. You did cook some food. Good job.
Chicken fried steak, okra, squash.
It was very delicious. Yes. I ate it for 3 days.
We've been gnawing on your tabbouleh salad left over from the long lunch club.
That's true. Yeah, I think we're done with that though now.
I haven't boiled eggs in a while.
We tried to feed Lily some food last night and it was moldy. Listen, this is what's happening at the dinner tables. Thank God for my mother.
That's the truth.
Seriously.
That's the truth.
She has been the best neighbor that could exist.
Oh, yeah.
And she made tomato basil soup and grilled cheese sandwiches.
Yeah. And you had gluten-free bread.
She did.
Because we're I think, all like between the two of us, we've got most bases of gluten-free covered.
And you know what?
I have to officially
let my anxiety go about the gluten-free stuff tonight with the meatloaf. And we're going to talk about the meatloaf another time. But it's done. My mom understands my concerns about gluten. And she's going to make sure they don't get in things that I want to eat. But the food that's coming out of my mom's kitchen mm-hmm. is fantastic. Mm. And she's starting to take, I mean, it's no different than kind of what was going on at our house, but she's taking the traditionals, the spaghettis and the tacos and the meatloafs and the tomato basil soups
chili.
And chili and all of the things. And then she's incorporating all of the things that we're creating here. So she made tomato basil soup and she goes, I put your basil pesto in it. And this recipe that she came up with and adding my basil pesto and the fresh basil from the garden and all of that stuff just made this recipe fantastic. You haven't made a tomato basil soup as good as this one. It was.
Why do you think I asked her for the recipe?
It was really, really, really good. And the thing about it is that part of the challenge is that she's saying, like, you asked her today for Nana's meatloaf recipe.
She said, hey, how about if I make meatloaf?
Yeah.
And then she said, hey, yes or no on this thing. Talk about that maybe some other time.
Right.
And then I said, but really, at the end of the day, I want Nana's meatloaf.
Yeah.
Don't ask me about that. You make your meatloaf. That's the meatloaf that I want.
Well, the challenging part for us in terms of like even giving a recipe here on the podcast or me giving a recipe at the Long Lunch Club or any of the things we do like that is that we use recipes, but they're not the recipes. I mean, we're using our own recipes. We're taking three recipes and combining them together. Or we're throwing in this or that because we have extra, you know, that kind of thing.
Certainly making substitutions.
Yeah, exactly. Making substitutions. So she made this fantastic tomato basil soup and then grilled cheese sandwiches. And Savannah and I came over there and we got our bowl and sat down and ate with them. And you were with us in that same setting?
Yeah, that was one because this time change, I'm coming home. And we're able to eat together and then I can zip over to record the other podcast.
Well, and Savannah finished her theater, so you're getting home earlier.
Yeah.
That's really nice. So yeah, it was really, really good. I was excited to have that. And you know what? Thankfully, that and of course the fry night that you did.
It is a traffic jam of activity.
Yeah, we've had this...
A funeral out of nowhere.
We've had all of these like unexpected events just keep popping into our life in the midst of already a booked schedule. There's a couple of things I've said. Number one, I'm excited to be unexpectedly caught off guard by my daughter going to the playoffs in volleyball.
This is amazing.
Amazing.
Yeah, they're at this level in the playoffs now where they're getting better and better teams and they are rising to this occasion.
They are.
And these games are so exciting. They have been awesome.
They are. And I'm really, really proud of Lily because I feel like she peaked at the perfect time because she is on that court leading that team and you can see the difference when she's on the court and when she's not on the court.
Right.
And it's amazing and fun. But the fact of the matter is that I had to outright put my foot down and say no in November. I've had to turn down some things that I had committed to, which I've just said, this is what I'm doing with my life. There's a thing happening where we've got to be able to learn in this phase in life to say no, you know? One of the things that I would say, I learned a lot of good habits when I led Grow Local.
Uh-huh.
I learned a lot of good habits about running a business. I learned a lot of things that taught me to do things differently. And I would say this is one of those things because one of the habits that I had when I was the executive director of a nonprofit was that I felt like I had to say yes, that I felt obligated to say yes to everything. And
you had to chase everything.
I'm not sure that that was the right way to go about it, but that's what was happening. And it wore me out and it stressed me out. And one of the things that I saw happening was as things got layered upon layered, everything this week. I truly feel like the universe wasn't testing me, but I had created the perfect alignment to prove it. Prove it, Aislinn. Prove it that you're not going to just do exactly the same thing you've done before, which is say yes, overcommit, say yes, overcommit until you wear yourself down, you stress yourself out, you start getting sick, and then you bail out of a bunch of things.
Well, are you refining the yes, no button?
Absolutely.
Because there are things that you would say yes to.
Well, in order to say yes to driving to San Antonio tomorrow to the playoff game, they're there. Yeah. They're going.
They're three games away.
Oh my gosh. This is so exciting. In order to say yes to that, I had to say no to something else. But I'll tell you that when I said no, everything felt better. I could, one, relax from the anxiety that I was feeling, recognize and look around and go, God, that just solved a bunch of problems.
Yeah,
that just moved a bunch of things around and made it easier to do a lot of things. And I can now be excited about going to San Antonio to watch my daughter play volleyball and spending as much time as it takes to do it and not feeling bad about it at all.
And sending me constant updates.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
And just committing to that. So I committed to the no November, but a part of what's happening with that is that my business is just evolving very rapidly. And, you know, speaking of synchronicities and a decade later, I was starting a nonprofit a decade ago, the farmers market. And one of the things I always said was it was an accident that I started that thing. And it started rolling. And when it started rolling so fast that I was just running to stay ahead of it. And it didn't always go like that. It went up and down and all kinds of different things happened. But I constantly felt like I was having to just run like hell to stay ahead of this thing that was growing so fast behind me. And I don't want to live that life. That's not what I'm about. That's not the kind of person I want to be. But things are unfolding the way they did that time. And it's interesting because this is what I've always said is that there's this cosmic, I'm in a cosmic loop. And right now, in this moment in time, I'm making a decision for the next era. What do I want to do? What do I not want to do? What do I want to let go of? What do I want to carry through? Because there's a lot of similarities to what's happening now and what was happening then and the choices that I made then and choices I'm making differently now. And I can see different choices. This one, choosing this one. Nope, not choosing that one again. Did I do it this? And November's a good way to look at that because it's me saying, you got to learn to say no so that you can say yes to the things you want to say yes to.
November.
That's right. And you've got to learn to say yes to things that you were maybe scared to say yes to before and no to things that you were scared to say no to before so that opportunities can align the way they're supposed to align. And that's what's happening. And it's fascinating, the unfolding of my business. And it's fun. And I've been talking to you about, it's interesting to see it just perfectly working out. So like I hit up the Portland Farmers Market this past weekend and it was a huge success. It was a great marketing opportunity. We had the opportunity to talk to a lot of new people that hadn't heard about the farm, people that knew me growing up that stopped by that are like, oh my God, you're on our side of the bridge. I've got this question and that question and this question for you. And, you know, and like just a fun time. And my favorite success of all of the things was I decided to make some hibiscus mint tea and take it for tasting. But I had a bunch of stuff that I had dried and I had a bunch of fresh there for sale. And I sold out of every bit of Roselle edible hibiscus is the hibiscus mint tea. That's where that comes from because I gave samples away.
Free tea moves the tea.
It was so fun. And I just chatted and I taught people about things. So that went off like a hit. And then classes, this Herbs for Health class that's happening on Monday, it's filling up. People are so excited about it. The teacher is excited. I'm excited. The guests are excited. My dad mowed some sections down in the pasture. We've had a conversation about taking the farm dogs out to help me keep the animals, you know, at their distance so that we can have our business out there.
Okay, I see. This is the one where you're going to go through the farm and forage for edibles?
That's part of it.
So you needed a path through the pasture. People could walk and look. Oh.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
It's going to be fun.
And then I've got all these other awesome classes coming up. And the last couple of weeks, we've been talking about the Long Lunch Club.
Yes.
And I said that the next one's coming up on December the 30th. Well, one of our listeners contacted me and said, hey, can I get tickets? The Long Lunch Club for December 30th, because of her pushing, and not just her pushing, but someone at the farmer's market that came up to me and was like, I literally came here to meet you and to get on your list so that I can get invited to the Long Lunch Club.
Right.
Then you and I get into a conversation where you're basically like, what can I do to get some help with weed eating around here?
Remember when I weed eated? I hated it.
How much do I have to pay somebody to do that
job? Remember when I swept the floors and mopped them? I hated that. So I spent $300 on a robot and I'll never, ever have to do that again.
Yeah.
Is there a robot for weed eating?
No, there's not. But you asked me, what can we do to get someone that can help out with some of the farm chores that I need help with, that I'm needing your help with, that we don't want to leave to my dad to do? So,
well, I talked budget.
Exactly.
I talked using our income mm-hmm. to help us move our life in a direction where we're more productive.
Exactly.
And so, having more fun.
So I'm looking for a farmhand now, and it is a bit of a heavy labor job, but it could be very outdoor fulfilling. And it's one of those, you know, easygoing, I can fit it into my life kind of jobs.
And then I can go mulch the trees instead.
And I can garden instead of rolling up hoses. Literally, I'm hiring someone to roll hoses up for me. I hate them. And I'm going to teach them how to water, because what a waste of my time.
But someone out there wants to roll hoses and water.
I promise you, without a doubt in my mind, especially in the world we are now entering, that there is someone out there that would rather spend 5 hours a week to add to their cash flow doing some outdoor work where they do a little weed eating and they roll up hoses and they water things and they move heavy pots around and they dig a hole so I can plant a tree, or a simple outdoor job for 5 hours where they make a little cash flow to add into the other cash flow they're making in their life. I promise you that person is out there, and I will find him or her, and it will be perfect. In the meantime, I got another person reach out to me that I'm very excited about. She actually was interested in the work, but when it came down to it, I offered her an unpaid apprenticeship where she would come out for a couple of hours and just work alongside me. So basically, she's helping me and I'm going to teach her, which, you know me, it'll be a good apprenticeship.
Sure.
I'll get some things that I need out of the deal, but she will get a lot of what she needs out of the deal. And that's a good deal for homesteading, is to find someone that could a right hand.
If you're getting into backyard chickens, get a chicken friend.
Exactly.
Find that person that knows how to do it and let them teach you everything they know. They're probably will be very willing to give you that information.
So I'm just starting to make those deliveries for the larders that I created. Mm. And the larders are just a household and restaurant delivery system of produce. And these were things that were pre-invested in that help the farmer get the seeds and the plants that they need to get going. So those deliveries have begun happening. I've also got some flower deliveries that I've been making recently for someone that's putting on a wedding and
It's like thing after thing after thing.
It's literally just layering on top of each other. I had a consult this last week. So now it's getting to the point where I'm having like one consult minimally a month, sometimes more. So all of these business opportunities and all of these farm opportunities, all of these things are just starting to unfold in a way that I can't even exactly explain, in line with the idea of making intentions and November and making that change now. And what is the business that I now am moving into, and how does it reflect what we want here on the farm,
right,
and what works well for me? And it's unfolding well. Being chased by a snowball down a mountain, as my description of what was happening, is very different than
after we talked about getting rabbits.
It's just real flowy.
After we talked about getting rabbits, orders began flooding in. If y'all are doing rabbit, I want rabbit.
That happened.
It happened today again.
Yeah.
And I said,
we don't have any rabbits yet. I said, we have a rabbit cage.
If you listen to the podcast, you would have heard we're getting four to learn and, you know.
You guys, I'm very methodical about it this time.
But now
time.
I'm excited about rabbits. I'm excited about rabbits.
And listen, I know what I'm doing. And if I don't...
Oh, I believe you.
If I don't know what I'm doing, I'll learn very fast because I'm good at that. Well, hey, while we're in this intellectual vibe, why don't you kick over a question we can deep dive into?
The film questions continue. These are the ones you're really, really good at.
I thought last week's answer was fantastic when it all came down to it.
We were talking about films that define you. Go back to the last six episodes and hear those questions. Here's this week's question. What's the sexiest film?
What's the sexiest film? Sexiest film.
See, my logic mind says let's define sexy in film.
God, I hate this shit. I'm not good at it.
But then you have the excellent answers.
Okay, well, you give an answer and then let me think about it a minute.
Y tu mamá también.
I haven't even seen that movie.
Is a very sexy movie. Mm-hmm. I'm going to leave it at that because I get in trouble when I talk further.
You get in trouble when you talk further? I talked about sex life in Australian dong. What are we talking about?
So yeah, it's in Spanish. It's got a beautiful woman, a handsome men, and a sexy, socially charged sexcapade through the coasts of Mexico.
That sounds beautiful.
You should watch it with me.
I have to watch subtitles though, right? Which is hilarious because I watch subtitles all the time because I can't hear the television. But I can't watch like subtitles when I need to read it.
We turned on Dune on the TV and 6 minutes in, I was like, nope, we got to go to the theater. Because I was so...
And then we turned it on again and I fell asleep in the first 5 seconds.
The size of the TV, first of all. But then secondly, I don't want those subtitles up for a movie like that. I want to be able to focus on that visual image.
Yeah.
Anyway, you're trying to avoid the question.
I hate that I can't think of it. I have an answer. I know that I do. I just can't think of it.
Would it have sex scenes or would it be a sexy man looking sexy? Is there a movie about a guy, not one of a Matthew McConaughey movie where he's super sexy? And maybe that's not the sexiest film. Or did you watch a movie where people were getting it on? You're like, ooh, that's sexy.
Okay. I gotcha. I'm not sure that I have the sexiest movie, but I can tell you the sexiest person and pretty much I can tell you several things that she is in.
Oh.
You already know the answer to this question.
I know the she that you're probably talking about.
Angelina Jolie.
That's who I would have guessed.
So pretty much.
Maleficent herself.
Anything she does, I find sexy. Like Lara Croft Tomb Raider, like she's so sexy in that movie. And my first love with her was Gia.
Uh-huh. I mean,
and actually that was concurrent with.
You're getting all tongue-tied.
Hackers.
Okay.
So Hackers the and Gia I punch. Saw kind of at the same time. And That's when I first fell in love with her. And I like want to kiss her.
Oh.
Yeah.
Girl Interrupted.
Yeah, Girl Interrupted wouldn't be sexy necessarily. I mean, she was like.
Mr. and Mrs. Smith?
Well, anything else.
Yeah.
I mean,
she stuck her leg out.
The Girl Interrupted one doesn't really like that. That part of her is.
Yeah, she's mannequin.
Well, and she's too like 90s angsty for me at that point. I'm like, no, you're too skinny.
That's what I was saying about Fight Club.
Get your beautiful, sexy hips back in there.
Too 90s angsty.
Yeah, I get it. But yeah, anything Angelina Jolie does. And you know what? I don't give a crap if that makes me basic. I loved Angelina Jolie and Matthew McConaughey before they were cool and sexy.
I give you Gia as the sexiest film.
Gia.
Over
Hackers.
Hackers.
Yeah, Hackers wasn't necessarily sexy, but I'm trying to think because that would be where it would come with for me. Like, interestingly enough, when I think of sexiest movies, I don't think of men. I think of women. I've already named Sweeney Todd. Like, that's a sexy movie to me.
So the act of sex in a movie is not the thing that you think is sexy in movies.
No. For me, sexy
Basic
movies.
Basic instinct.
Yeah, no. I'm sure that there was, yes, there are titillating moments. I mean, sexy, if we're just talking about a great sex scene, one that comes to mind from time to time.
Well, if you've got an
Surfer
answer.
Dude.
Surfer Dude.
He has a movie? Moment in there. Yeah, Matthew McConaughey, Surfer Dude.
There's a movie called Surfer Dude with Matthew McConaughey?
Yes.
And it's got a great sex scene in it?
Oh my God.
Okay.
Surfer Dude. Oh my God. That's sex. That's not sexy.
What is sexy?
Sexy is like voluptuous, beautiful women. Like, we're beautiful and the look of us smells good.
A knife wielding, throat slitting Johnny Depp.
Well, yeah, but that's voluptuous and.
Hey, look, different strokes.
You know what? And there's an element of like bright red, round blood. In Sweeney Todd.
Okay.
Do you know what I'm saying?
That's, like, that's sexy?
It's that aesthetic of the red, crimson, you know. That is very voluptuous to me and very creative to me. And I guess I'm a witch. I don't know. Help us name the chickens.
Well, thank you so much for listening to another episode of Dinner Table Talks. We will be back next Monday with a fresh episode. In the meantime,
hit us up on social media, send us an email, DM us, whatever. We want to hear from you.
And we hope that you're enjoying the episodes as much as we enjoy creating them for you.